This episode of Storyworthy is brought to you by GoDaddy. You know, GoDaddy has everything you need to put your business out there and kick ass online. So get started by registering a domain name and creating your website with GoDaddy's easy-to-use website builder. Already have a site? Well, keep it running fast with GoDaddy's web hosting. All right, you guys, let's do this thing. Visit GoDaddy.com, enter the promo code STORY32, and save 32% on new purchases. Some limitations apply. See website for details. And remember, enter the promo code STORY32 and you are supporting Storyworthy. Thank you.
This is Vito Lapacola from Comics on Comics, and you're listening to Storyworthy.
Hey! Welcome to the Storyworthy Podcast. Here are your hosts, Christine Blackburn and Hannes Finn.
Welcome to Storyworthy. My name is Christine Blackburn, and I'm here with
Hannes Finney, and we're coming to you from Detroit, Michigan, one of America's finest cities at some point in the past. Right now, it's a little slow here. We're actually in a rubble-filled vacant lot that was once a mansion.
Is that a VCR?
No, it's actually beta. And there's also a telegraph office on the corner.
And a couple of refrigerators on the side.
And of course, we are here because Detroit is the hometown and primary writing spot of
Elmore Leonard,
who figures prominently in our story today.
Yeah, and I get, you know, when we have guests on the show here at Storyworthy, I email with them and I say, what do you want to talk about? It's whatever you want, a true story, whatever you want to talk about. And I write to Vito Lapacola. I got it.
Vito Lapacola, hey.
So
you know, I like to eat his lunch meat. Oh, that did not sound good. Lapacola. It's got little pieces of fat in it.
There's olive bits.
There's little olive bits. Yeah. And you got to take the
Lapacola,
skin off.
Vito Lapacola, you guys. He's the guest tonight. And he tells me via email that he would like to do a story called Elmore Leonard Saved My Life. And so, of course, I say...
You say to yourself,
Google,
who the hell is Elmore Leonard?
And
you
then
don't
I look at the Wikipedia
novels.
Page, and now I know he was an author.
One of the greatest crime novels of the 20th century.
And
Hannes, absolutely amazing.
You know more about this subject.
Yeah, I am.
So why don't you tell us?
Well, he is... a spectacular writer. Now, my personal favorite in this genre is Raymond Chandler, frack from the 30s and the 40s. But Elmore Leonard would be a very good modern Chandler or Hammett kind of guy. And his thing was that he did a lot of research and he wrote sparingly. It's a famous quote from him, which is, I always try to leave out the scenes that people skip. And I read, it's like a great quote because I'm always reading books and even if it's good, I'm like, okay, so I've been reading the Game of Thrones books and some of it I'm like, I got to savor every minute, every page, every word. This is great.
Right.
And I get to this other scene and I'm like, I got the idea. It's like sometimes writers, I think, do get in love with the idea of filling the page. And
yeah,
so he was like, no,
say that,
he wants it to be a short, well, it's like comedy. A joke should always be the shortest possible version.
Right, with the fewest words.
Yeah, and he wrote novels that way. And that was why he's so great with screenplays. It's like there's so many movies and TV shows made from his stuff. Get Shorty, Justified is based on a story of his.
And Jackie Brown.
Jackie Brown, of course. And just to give you an example, a couple of quotes from his books that we have here. It's actually on a billboard here at the corner of Elmore and Leonard. But not people know that was his name is actually John Finkelstein, but he decided to change it to Elmore Leonard when he lived at this. You never know what somebody might tell you, Chris said, when they think you're somebody else.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah. All over the world, the past is being wiped out by condominiums. I love that.
That because sounds like such an 80s thing to say from
yeah,
the 1980s.
See? Yeah,
because condos were so big in the 80s, right?
That's true. But it's like, yeah, imagine all the places that you go back to your hometown and there's something's not there anymore. What the hell is there? A condominium.
We got to live somewhere.
No, I know.
That?
But it's like they just decided to actually in L.A. here, we just stick condominiums everywhere. There's a on Tahunga right by the 101.
Right.
This is for the five people who know what I'm talking about. There's like a little shopping center with a drive-through Starbucks, and across the street is the freeway. It's like right there. and they have decided to build like a 10-story condominium complex. Like, yeah, that's, and people will live there because it's LA and we need somewhere to live.
Right.
But who the hell wants to stand,
you know,
sit on their balcony and look at the freeway?
What always kills me are the people that live in the shopping malls, like people that live at the Grove or the Americana.
Yeah.
And they
yeah.
have to listen to like Standards and Frank Sinatra.
They do that all over.
All
back in Milwaukee, they have a place called Bayshore, which used to be a regular mall, and now they've changed it to an Americana type thing.
Right.
Yeah, and it's like they're trying to recreate it. It's like, well, you know, if you lived in New York or Chicago in 1930, you would have lived above a store. Well, I don't live there. So now I'm like,
plus,
I don't
it wouldn't
fucking
have been a big chain store, department store like Nordstrom's. Or, you know, and,
yeah, there would have
and
been City Life
fountains.
Going by or something.
Were there
but now you have,
then?
You know, yeah. Exactly. No, they were just water main breaks. I saw
so
that in
strange.
The Godfather.
I mean, now you live above a cheesecake factory. That's not acceptable.
Right, and you have to listen to the same. You know how you work in a store and they play the same music over and over again
yeah.
and you want to shoot yourself in the head? Imagine that's outside your house.
Well, let me say this. Have you ever seen anybody sitting on their balcony in one of those places?
That's
no.
That's absolutely
because
true.
Because you would
no.
look up at them and you would say, you are a loser.
Yeah.
What are you doing here? You're obviously foreign.
Yeah.
That's
or
not
you
nice.
Just
that wasn't
or
nice.
Are you young? Yeah, well. Or, yeah, no, you're young and you have money, which probably means that you're foreign. But it's like Kayla Bacon, friend of the show, lives in a place. It's not in a mall, but it's like a new building. And it's like everybody in there is like young and has money and likes to party. And that's it. Like,
that's a good thing.
Well, yeah, when you're young and you have money. If
well,
you're
Kayla
old and
Bacon,
poor,
he's like 33.
That's true.
Good for him.
Fine.
Plus now his last name is Bacon.
Yeah, you really can't beat that.
Hey, ladies and gentlemen, we do have a great storyteller here tonight, like I said. Before we bring on our guest, Vito Lapacola, I did want to remind you guys that if you would like to support Storyworthy, and boy, wouldn't that be great, Hunts?
That would be nice. You can go to storyworthypodcast.com, and you can click on the Amazon ad.
That's
and
one
go
way.
Through and buy whatever you want, and we get a little tiny taste, or...
Right, we also have a PayPal monthly donation button, which, you know what, you guys, if you give us like $5 a month, that would pay for a lot, wouldn't it, Hannes?
Yeah, and what's $5 to you?
What is $5
What can
bucks
you buy
you?
At five? You can buy a $5 box at Taco Bell, except there's tax, so it's not even $5.
Do they call it a $5 box?
That is.
I think that is so catchy.
It is, and at Jack in the Box, they have a thing called a $6 box, and it's so obviously directed toward high young people at 2 a.m.
Right.
It's like you can't even
that's
like
my demographic.
You can't look at the menu and go, oh, I want a burger. You can't differentiate. You just go, give me box.
Yeah.
$5 box. You know there'll be
please.
Food inside of it and a drink next to it. And they could just ladle in like, you know, refried beans and give you a straw.
You and
that
I
would
have
be
always had that not in common, Hannes, is the fast food thing.
Yes, you hate fast food, which is a good
I don't
thing.
Say I hate it. I just never, ever, ever eat it. Like, literally once a year. Like, it doesn't even occur to me. I think because
no,
in L.A.
It would
I go
be better
to the taco
if it didn't
stand.
Occur to me. No.
Yeah, but there's like a taco stand and there's much more better fresh food that's quickly available at one of the trucks. You know what I mean? Or at the farmer's market or whatever. There's just better food around.
No, it's just, it's an old habit that I picked up as a child living in Milwaukee where there was not, you know, back in my day, we didn't
like
have a wagon come by.
But we get prepared food at Trader Joe's all the time.
No, I eat that too.
Well, but okay,
sometimes,
but that, I mean, have, that's better.
No,
that's a step up from
it's
fast
a ridiculous,
food, isn't it?
No, it is often an irresistible impulse.
I see.
To be like, I'm going home, I've had a bad day, I've dealt with Chinese tourists, I'm in a bad mood.
Yeah.
I'm going to, like, and I look and I say, for a dollar, I can get a chili potato grilled stuffer
God
griller
bless your fiance.
At Taco Bell. Yeah.
Jesus Christ. Sherry has to live with this.
Yeah, but then I call her and I say, I'm in line at Taco Bell. And she says, okay, well, get me two tacos. But she gets them the Fresca style, which
uh-huh.
is the diet style,
oh,
where
sure.
it's just they put salsa on it and they don't put any cheese on there.
Oh, that's probably a better thing, I would
say. It is a better thing. I don't like it.
You know what our buddy Randy does? You know what he indulges in?
What?
He goes home and he drinks grape soda.
Who is this?
Randy.
Oh, grape soda.
How gross
He's
is that?
He's not black.
Oh, Jesus.
Oh, I went to, I see.
Ladies and gentlemen,
black
look,
people
folks,
never drink weird soda,
you
sure.
You can also email us here at info@storyworthypodcast.com. And if you want to head over to iTunes and leave us a good review, we always welcome that. And how much does that cost, Hannes?
Nothing.
That's
just your time and your sweetness. And I just have to say this, by the way, about the fast food, just to go back for a second. for a person, and this is not, this is just an observation, for a person who smokes as much medical marijuana as you do, the fact that you never go to a drive-thru is amazing. That actually makes no, you must really have an abhorrence to, because
I go to sushi.
God, that
Ladies
doesn't sound like it.
Anyhow,
give us some money or give us a review. Do something. Send us Taco Bell certificates. We don't care.
Honest, remember that time you won a year's worth of Wiener Schnitzel hot dogs?
I won 52 meals at Wiener Schnitzel because I was in a contest online, and I used them all.
I went with you a few times. It's
you
amazing
did.
How many hot dogs choices there are.
There are a lot of hot dog choices, yes. And they even have, well, they have... As you may recall, if you ever saw the Fast Foodie, for the three people out there that saw that, they have the Polish sandwich, in which it's rye bread. They slice the Polish sausage down the center, lay it on the rye bread, and create a little buttocks between the two sides, and they they put
gross.
A quarter slice of pickle in the middle there. Yeah.
That's foul, man. That's
it's really dirty
food.
It look, because it's pigs. Yeah, it is kind of dirty food.
All right, you guys, wherever you are, stay tuned because Vito Lapacola is on his way here. Next week on Storyworthy, we have rocker John Thomas Griffith.
We're going to talk about Mardi Gras.
That's next week on Storyworthy. All right, listen up, you guys. You've heard about this. Adam Carolla is leading the fight against patent trolls who want to claim podcast technology as their own. They're trying to assert themselves as the owner of the patent of podcasting. It's important for Storyworthy and all the podcasts because if Adam goes down, we all go down. It's domino theory, just like Vietnam. So please visit fundanything.com/patent troll and give anything that you can.
And right now, as an incentive, if you donate $100, you can be on the Storyworthy podcast to tell your own true story. Head on over to fundanything.com/patent troll and we appreciate your support.
Hello, this is Bobby Dooley, and you're listening to the Storyworthy podcast with your hosts Christine Blackburn and Hannes Thinney. And I'm just, you know what? There's a little bit of streaking going on, so I've got to change.
And we're back. We've actually left Detroit and the United States. We crossed over very on the ferry, to Windsor, Ontario in Canada to go to the myriad strip clubs there.
I was born in Ontario.
I have no idea what
that's a Neil Young song. He was born in Ontario.
Really?
There you go, ladies and gentlemen.
I know he's from Canada. I assumed he was born in a prairie somewhere. He just
maybe it was a prairie. So
no,
what?
Ontario doesn't have a prairie. Ontario is where Toronto is.
Okay.
Ontario,
well,
I believe, is the most.
Why can't
sophisticated.
That have prairie?
Actually, it could because they're so big. That's the funny thing about the and this is podcast gold talking about the provinces in Canada, but they're so huge because there's only like six of them, and they start at the bottom, which is the northern United States, and they just go straight up. To the top. So each province is like gigantic. It's like seven states wide. And so, yeah, who knows what's at the top of Ontario as they go and look at the Russians.
All right, you guys, Vito Lapacola is here right now.
Vito Lapacola!
Vito is the co-creator and the co-host of Comics on Comics, which is one of the very first geek podcasts on the net. He's also an award-winning filmmaker who co-wrote and produced the feature films Normandy, which is a World War II epic, and also Code 207. And he directed the critically acclaimed short film Under My Skin. You can find Vito on Twitter at Comics on Comics. So, folks, wherever you are, please put your hands together for Vito Lapacola.
Hello. Okay, so this is the story of how Elmore Leonard saved my life. Back in the mid-90s, I was living in Chicago, and I had recently gotten into a very, very big kick of reading pulp fiction novels. So I was reading James M. Cain, Dashiell Hammett, and so forth, and I was having some pizza with my very good friend Shea Williams, and he says to me, bro, you really have to read Elmore Leonard. And, you know, naturally, as Christine pointed out earlier, she was like, who the fuck is Elmore Leonard? And he says, you got to read this guy. He has the best dialogue. His characters suit you to a T. So he recommends that I go out and I get a copy of the book Get Shorty, which literally changed my life and saved it. So I read this book Get Shorty, and the basic idea is about a loan shark who comes from Miami to Hollywood to collect on a vig. It ends up becoming a movie producer, and I took immediately to the character. And the idea behind Elmore Leonard's books is that these are very realistic people who put on faces. They put on characters that they wear around certain people in order to give a certain perception and get what they want. And when these characters meet, they clash. Well, I devoured everything that Elmore Leonard had ever read, but I kept coming back to Get Shorty. Because Get Shorty, for some reason, the character of Chili Palmer, this Italian guy, I'm Italian, who wants to go to Hollywood and be a filmmaker. I wanted to go to Hollywood and become a filmmaker. Something about this character struck a chord with me. And so cut to late one night, 2 a.m., I was at a L train stop in a very dangerous neighborhood. It was very cold outside. And I was wearing a leather coat, much like Chili Palmer wears in the book. And there was no one up there but myself. And across the tracks, these two very dangerous-looking, very large Latino gangbangers walked onto the platform and had a seat. And I immediately got my spidey sense going, and I realized that these men were watching me. There was nobody downstairs taking tickets, so we were literally the only three people there. And so after a few moments of awkwardly waiting for the train, I saw one of the gangbangers lean over to the other one, whisper, point at me, tap him on the shoulder, and then they got up and split up and took separate stairs to come get me. And so I looked in the distance, no train. So at that point, I was just about crapping my pants. I'd never studied any martial arts. I'd never done anything like that. I'd never been in a fight. And I had the sudden realization that I was either about to get my ass severely kicked, robbed, or both, or possibly even die. And at that moment, this very strange calm came over me. And for some reason, I flashed back to the Elmore Leonard book, Get Shorty. And I had this realization that the character of Chili Palmer wasn't such a tough guy. But what he did was he would put on a mask of being a tough guy. And whenever he encountered danger, he would sort of slip into this character role and he would confound the other people. And so I took a moment to calculate my other chances. I could fight. I could try to run down the stairs, but at that point it was much too late because they had already gotten a head start on me. Or I could try to run across the tracks and avoid the third rail and get electrocuted, sit on the bench, and when they got up there and, wait, where is this guy? Wave at them like, you know, the kid from Home Alone, like, ha-ha. I realized I was going to have to fight. And so what I did was I reached my arms out. I got a good space of like where my reach was. And I made it up in my mind that the first man to get close to me, no matter if he was going to say, hey, Holmes, you got a light? Hey, man, do you know the way to? I didn't care what was going to be said. I was going to punch him as fast as I could and as hard as I could and as brutal as I could and see what happened. So I hear them coming up the stairs and I could hear the clump of their feet. It was very cold that night, but it wasn't snowy. And every time I would move, I could hear the crackle of my coat. And I got very tense, and I just kept thinking, what would Chili Palmer do? What would Chili Palmer do? And so I took a very deep breath, and these men came up the stairs, and I saw them look at me, and I was about 20 feet from them, and they started to walk towards me. I stopped, I relaxed every muscle in my body, and I tensed my gloves, and I was wearing these leather gloves. And the sound of it was very loud, and it went, and I saw them stop. And then, in my very best Chili Palmer moment, I turned, I shot them this glance, like, you sons of bitches, and I shook my head like, don't even fucking try it. And that stopped them dead. They both looked really surprised. And then, I'm crazy enough to have done this, I started walking towards them very aggressively as if I was going to beat the shit out of them. And the first guy let out a yell, bumped into his buddy, and they ran down the stairs, and I never saw them again. And the bus came, or the train came, and I was able to get on the train. And I got on the train, and I sat down, and I said, holy shit, I almost got rolled, man. I'd never been in an altercation before, but flashing back to that character, Elmore Leonard's writings and the way that he talked about putting on a character before you go into a meeting or whatever carried over into my Hollywood life. When I came to Los Angeles, I became a bouncer at the Improv, where I had met Hannes in the past. And anytime danger would come in, I would slip into the I would ask myself, what does Chili Palmer do? What would Chili Palmer do in a situation like this? And the best moment that I could remember was this very large black guy came in. And I'm only saying, pointing out that he was black, because the next thing is he had grape soda in his hand. No, I'm just kidding. But he had the worst. He had the worst Jerry curl you've ever seen. It looked like somebody dipped him headfirst into this Jerry curl. He was about 6.5 feet tall, wearing a big black trench coat. And he was staring very wildly at the girls. And the manager came over to me and he said, "Vito, get this fucking guy out of here." And of course, I said, I'm going to have to go into Chili Palmer mode. So I walk up to the guy and I said, "Excuse me, man, you're bothering the girls. You're going to have to leave." And he looked me in the eye and he said, "Hey, man, I'm not leaving. There's nothing you could do to me that's going to make me walk out of this place." And so, again, I slip into Chili Palmer mode. I looked him straight in the eye and I said, "You have the choice of walking out of here or me carrying you out of here. What's it going to be?" And he sat there for a second. He said, "Look, man, relax, relax." And then I said, "It looks like your hair is doing enough relaxing for the both of us." And then everyone in the bar laughed, and he got so ashamed that he turned and he walked out of the bar. So I've applied the Elmore Leonard Chili Palmer dynamic to my life and almost everything I do. I dress like him now. I wear suits and everything like that. And I don't let people intimidate me. I've been in meetings with some very high-powered people, but the Elmore Leonard principle has always worked. And so as a postscript to this story, a few years ago, I was very late for a meeting and I was out by UCLA and I was crossing the street and I happened to look up and walking past me was a man that I recognized. And I saw him for just a second and it didn't dawn on me until he was about 20 feet away that it was Elmore Leonard. And I wanted to stop him and tell him how he saved my life. And I turned, but he was already way, way far away, and I wasn't able to thank the man. So it really broke my heart when he died, because I always wanted that opportunity to be able to tell him. I know a lot of people read your stuff and have gotten enjoyment out of it, but your books literally gave me the power to save my life.
Wow, Vito, that's a pretty great nice story. Story. Cool.
Thank you.
That story could get you laid.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It has gotten me laid.
Yeah. No, it's a really great story.
She's like, take off everything, but put the gloves back on.
Yeah, put the gloves
back on. But really, to find that inner strength, that's really something you really trusted yourself.
It was a moment, you know, I've done a lot of Zen meditation and stuff like that. So I realized that, you know, it sounds very New Agey and stuff like that, but you only have this moment, you know what I mean? And it was very weird, but that sense of danger focused me so intently that all of the fear fell away and all there was myself and these people and me having to do something.
Right. Kind of and also the, action. Like when you, like any troublesome situation, when there's no choice left, it actually, it's very calming.
Right.
Like whether it's danger, whether there's trouble or, you know, somebody sick, it's like when there's nothing left, you're like, you just stand there, you're like, there's nothing that I got one thing I can do.
Yep.
And yeah, talk about characters. I mean, it's like those guys, those game bangers I'm putting on, hey, it's a couple of punk ass schmucks from, you know, they're like, oh, there's two of them. You know, if there weren't two of them, believe me, neither one of you, even the first place, would have come
right.
up to you.
Right.
But it's like, yeah, the best thing I think you could have done was walk toward them.
No, you're definitely, like, definitely. He did the right thing.
Oh, no, yeah. I know, but not even.
I could feel myself there on like that train platform.
The most. That's cold. When you start toward them, they went, oh, shit.
They
this
realize.
This is not some fucking Blanco.
You have to turn on the crazy talk.
Yeah. And I found many times in life that just flashing back to, you know, that idea that you put on this character.
Yeah.
That character empowers you. And I mean, you look at a lot of actors and that's the thing that gets them through their lives. You know, the reason why people become actors is because they want to feel that sense of power or that sense of entitlement.
Right.
And it's very interesting. I highly recommend that everyone read the book Get Shorty, not only because it's helped me navigate Hollywood in a way that nothing else could, but it genuinely is almost like a blueprint for how to live your life without taking shit from people, but not have to be an aggressive a-hole.
Well, I'm going to do that. I'm going to get that book now. I'm excited.
It's really incredible.
I'm really
so
excited.
And we've
about
all seen
that.
The movie, of course.
Yeah, I've seen
the movie. Which, by the way, was one of the few movies that did justice to a book.
Yes.
Because, like, there's a sequel. It's what John Travolta plays.
Right.
But there's also, he wrote a sequel to Get Shorty, and they made a movie sequel to Get Shorty.
It was horrible.
Which was horrible.
Right. Yeah.
And it's just like, it just shows you how ephemeral acting is, and it's like you hit it right on the nose. Same cast, same. Nope, didn't work.
Didn't get it. Yeah.
It's so weird how that happens.
Yeah, it just
when
could not.
When you see a cast like that, and then it fall through, it's really strange when that happens.
Like I would say, like Casablanca, my favorite movie, is one of four movies that Humphrey Bogart made that year. And immediately after Casablanca, Humphrey Bogart and Claude Rains, who are in Casablanca, made a movie called Passage to Marseille with the same director, same writers. Terrible.
So nobody
like a month. It's like a month later. The same guys in the same place. Doesn't work.
What could possibly go wrong?
Yeah,
well,
exactly.
It's almost like Lord of the Rings, how they do one or two films at the same time, or you know, they're always shooting two at the same time, and one doesn't do well and one does well.
Yeah.
Except I think they both did well.
Well, this is more like we forget that in the 40s when they made movies, there was no television. They needed product.
Yeah, well, you get a movie a week.
Movie stars make a movie a year now. Movie stars used to make 4 movies a year.
Right. Yeah.
Because they would constantly go through. But you're talking about, Humphrey Bogart is a perfect example of, like, the character. Humphrey Bogart was a small man.
Yeah.
And he could put a look on his face like, I'm just going to kill you.
Yeah.
I'm Humphrey Bogart, and I'm going to kill you. And it's like, this idea that most people are completely full of shit, and if you just give them what they're afraid of, they'll be afraid of it.
Well, you know, it's interesting because I have a basic theory that most people operate out of fear.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why people get in your face or you go in and these Hollywood executives and stuff are so aggressive and so, you know, is because they're afraid. And so if you go in there with this this air of not being afraid of anything that they're throwing at
and
you.
And confidence.
That they have nothing that they can do to you that's going to kill you.
Right.
There's something about it that just makes
them
turn into pussycats.
It's really weird. It's really empowering to have that.
Yeah.
And it takes a long time. And part of that, I think, is finding your voice in Hollywood. And I remember when I first got out here, Mark Lano from the Improv says, Hannes, you know Mark
as
well.
Right, he took his classes.
He says it takes at least 7 years to find your voice. And I remember thinking, 7 fucking years? I don't have fucking 7 years. Well, it's been 17 years.
Yeah.
And I think I just got a grip on this thing about 2 years ago.
Exactly.
Like, I just got a grip. And things are turning a corner and things are getting better.
Yeah. And
but
knowing,
it takes time. It's definitely not necessarily you flip on the switch. I mean, there's a process because it's really self-awareness.
Yeah. And I want to say
a
different version of that I have in my head of you're like, you can't hurt me. Is when you go in, it's like, you know, I've been through enough, and everybody at this table has probably been through enough that it's like you go into a meeting, nothing that happens in this meeting is close to the worst thing that's ever happened to me.
Yeah.
Right.
It's like, nope, 10th, 100th. It's like people, and everybody in this town is usually on, I don't know if they've never had a real problem or if they just forget it, but they're always like, if we don't get this made, this is horrifying.
It's the end of the world.
It's not horrifying.
But that's fear-based. But that's what he's saying, I think.
I agree. It's in the same
logo. It's just fear-based. They're afraid of rejection and being turned down.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's
that's powerful.
Yeah. And there's another principle, too, that I learned from that, which was really interesting, was that you try not to dwell on things very much. And at the end of the book, you know, and the movie, the character has a gun drawn on him, and he basically walks in, he throws a bag of money to the guy, and they walk out. And she says, wow, why aren't you afraid? And he goes, I was afraid 5 minutes ago, but it's not happening anymore. Like, we're out of danger. So, like, once he does something, he gets rid of it, and he does it. So the book really is an amazing blueprint. And I recommend anything by Elmore and Leonard. Even his worst books are better than 98% of the crap you're going to read.
Yeah.
And they really do teach you, especially if you're an actor or an actress, about character and about how to use as few words as possible to say the maximum
amount. Now, how did
you
know what Elmore Leonard looked like when you saw him?
Oh, because I'm one of those people. I become very obsessed when I read something. So I researched the guy, his history, his life. I watched interviews with him.
And how old do you
think
he was then?
He was, so he died when he was 87. He was around 84. He was prepping Justified, which is what I found out he was probably in town working on because it came out the next year.
Right. Jim Beaver's on that show.
Oh, yeah.
And he's been
on
Storyworthy. Yeah. Great actor.
Yeah.
So let me ask you a little bit about the Improv.
Sure.
How many years were you a bouncer there?
I was there from 2001 to 2005.
Wow.
Which I call the golden age, even though, I mean, everybody who is there has a golden age. But this was when Zach Galifianakis.
Yeah, I used to hang out there
Sarah
at that
Silverman,
time.
You know, they were all kind of rising up. Patton Oswalt, nobody kind of knew who they were. And
right.
I remember Louis C.K. would have shows where there were like 3 people in the audience and they'd boo him and stuff. You know, and you're like, what's going on here?
Yeah.
And now, you know.
I once saw in that time period Richard Jenny, who unfortunately killed himself a couple of years ago, come in.
Do you know it's been like 10 or 12 years now, or 15 years maybe?
I've hit an age where everything is 3 years ago. No matter what it is. You remember World War II 3 years ago?
Maybe 7 years, because I met him about 3 weeks before he did it, which was really horrible.
Oh, wow.
He came to the club and did a
Well, I think now we know why.
What did you do, Vito?
Yeah.
Well,
you had to get tough with him, didn't you?
There was something.
Don't even think about not shooting yourself.
He was supposed to get 7 to 10. You gave him 5 and gave him the light at 4.
I was like, I know you're Richard Jenny, but this is the improv. Yeah.
But no, it was a Wednesday night, right? Dead. Like 10 people in the audience. Show is just going on and on and on. It's horrifying. And he comes in to try something out, and he like completely fucking turned the room around.
Amazing.
And turned it into a show.
He was a master.
There was nothing happening in this room at all.
And he did
and he
it.
Just created it out of
that's
sheer
awesome.
Talent. Yeah,
yeah,
that's amazing.
That's awesome.
Yeah, he was one of the greats, man. It broke my heart when I heard that he did that.
Yeah.
So tell us a little more about being a bouncer at the Improv. And have you ever been in a fight ever in your life at this point?
Yes. The interesting thing that also happened the night after my near rumble was that I enrolled in Aikido classes to learn martial arts. And so that also kind of in a way saved my life, because it taught my fat ass, you know, coordination and how to move properly and breathe and how to handle even crazier situations than getting rolled by gangbangers. And so, yes, I did on occasion have to defend myself at the Improv from very drunken people. But thankfully, most of them were comedians who kind of, you know, had never been in a fight either.
And they don't go to the gym, most likely.
But yeah, and I did, you know, have to do a couple of arm bars on some people or lead people out.
What's an arm bar?
It's like if somebody grabs your lapel, you it's kind of hard to describe, you know, but you grab their hand and you kind of control their elbow.
Oh, right.
And get them in a joint
right.
lock. And
But even if you don't wear a lapel, they could still grab you there.
Right. They're trying to, and the hope is to block it before they get there and take them down, you know. But I did have to take a couple of people down, but it was not, you know, you'd be surprised at how much, you know, talking to a person and psyching them out would get them to leave more than it is getting in a fight.
Right.
But I'm confident enough, I guess, that if I got into something, as long as there wasn't a knife involved, that I could get out
but
of
that's
it.
The
yeah,
problem.
Every once in a while, there's
know.
A guy who's yeah. like, I'm here to get in a fight.
Yes.
That's the the guy you want to watch out for.
Yes. And there, I will, if I may, give you
Please.
Another quick diversion to show how being kind to people can sometimes help. There was a guy that was in the bar. He had a really bad vibe. It was creeping everybody out. It was really dark. Mm-hmm. And the boss came over and said, get this guy out of here. So I said, there's something about him. I know that he has nothing to lose. Like, I'm not going to be able to win if I fight this guy. And so I waited till he went to the bathroom. No, this is not where you think it is. But I went into the restroom.
You do what you do for the Improv. You got to blow a guy. You got to blow a guy.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And I got a job out of it. No. So he was back and he, you know, went to the restroom and I had hair at the time and I acted like I was, you know, running water through my hair and everything. And he comes up to wash his hands and I said, hey man, how's it going? He goes, it's really bad. And I said, what happened? And he goes, I lost my job and my girlfriend left me and everything. And so this negative energy that he was emanating wasn't one out of, you know, anger or whatever. It was out of desperation. He was there to just do something that would make him feel alive again. And I said, listen, man, I'm not gay. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but like, would you like a hug?
Aww.
And he sat there and he looked at me for a second like, are you crazy? Go dead serious. Like, nobody has to know. Would you like a hug? And he went,
aww.
Yeah. And I reached over and I grabbed him. I bear hugged him. And he was like, thanks, man. And he went out to the bar. And then the boss was like, what happened? That guy's smiling. And I said, I gave him a hug. And he goes, oh, you're a pussy.
but you know, you're so cool.
No, but you have to have that kind
you're
of.
You're so cool.
You know what I mean? Like, not always being a tough guy.
I don't hug a lot of people in the
right
bathroom.
Way to do that. Yeah. I know. And that's why I had to quantify it beforehand. I said, look, I'm not trying to pick you up or
right,
anything.
Right.
But. You know,
that
sometimes
so
you need
kind.
To have that kind of stuff.
That
but
is very
that's
sweet.
Also a,
the best
you know,
defense is a good offense.
Right.
And
you don't put up.
No.
Sometimes it is and sometimes it isn't.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's about. But that, you know, again, something else about the Chili Palmer character that I really like is he's kind-hearted by nature.
Mm-hmm.
If you watch the movie, John Travolta really captures that, where the guy doesn't want to hurt you. He will if he has to. And
yeah,
if that's
it's, all,
last
it's
resort,
all business
but,
to him.
Yeah, but if he doesn't have to, he says, hey, I say as little as I need to,
right.
if that.
Well, that's Tony and, Soprano as well.
Yeah.
And really, any of those mob guys.
Yeah.
Let me ask you something.
Sure.
Earlier, before we started the podcast, I think somebody gave me the finger. Or, Hannes, did you? Somebody, you.
No, that was just
finger.
People were wandering down the hallway.
Somebody's middle finger went up, and you had a story about the middle finger.
Yeah, well, it turns out that the middle finger isn't such a bad gesture per se, and it originates from the Middle Ages when the archers were the most feared of the warriors on the sides of a battle.
By the way, in The Walking Dead, my favorite character is the one who always has an arrow on his back. What's his name again?
Oh, that's Daryl.
Daryl, he's the hottest.
Oh, awesome. all the girls want to bang redneck Daryl.
Oh, yeah, his
he started out
fantastic.
Like this crazy racist dude and then ended up being like the guy.
Well,
the
I read
loves,
a thing online when he
was The Bachelor.
There was a point where he picked up a baby, and people were writing on Facebook, it's like, it's a panty moistener. It's like pants are dropping all over America when Daryl's talking to the baby.
It's true.
Anyhow, note to self, get baby.
Get baby.
Quiver.
Get greasy hair.
He's at Comic-Con all the time, and he really loves his fans.
On
so
Sunset.
You should like, yeah, he tried to pick up a friend of mine.
Oh,
was,
wow.
Yeah, she was
okay,
like,
we'll
so
email each other. Yeah,
so,
let's text.
Yeah, you got to go to Comic-Con and meet this guy. But, you know, the middle finger was associated with the bow, because it's the quiver finger that these people would use to fire the arrows and kill hundreds of people before the battle started. And so what would happen is one side would grab the other's archers, and they would chop off their middle fingers so that they were useless in a battle. And so it became customary for one side to stand across the other, and they'd hold up their middle fingers to show them, hey, ha-ha.
To prove
it was an act of defiance.
They
to
still
show
have
they
their middle
yeah,
fingers.
Yeah, we're going to nail your ass with arrows because we got our middle fingers.
You know what they could have done? They could have hugged it out.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. True. You'd be surprised at how many, you know, if Hitler had just hugged it out with, you know, a couple of people, maybe things
would have
been a
lot
different.
Yeah, could have exactly. been.
Yeah. Thank you for the hug.
Tell me about your podcast, Comics on Comics.
Comics on Comics is, we tag it as the show where the greatest comic minds meet the greatest minds in comics. And what we do is, it's like real time with Bill Maher, but for geeks. We take comedians and comic creators and they have nerd debates.
But it is always about comics?
No, it's, we also talk about movies, video games, pop culture. We try to keep it as broad as possible so that, you know, it's not just for comic geeks. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we'll talk about, like, the Avengers movies. Like, hey, is Marvel making a mistake with Guardians of the Galaxy? And then we get these informed minds. Who knows?
No, I have no idea.
This is the opposite of a panty moistener.
Yeah, I know.
This is a crotch dryer right here.
There are a lot of hot geek girls, I'll tell you.
No, that's true. Actually, there are more than there used to be.
And also, the costumes they wear at Comic-Con are out of control.
Yeah.
I mean, they might be all painted blue or green, but they're very hot.
Yeah, it's okay to be a geek. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, we do a show there every year, and after the show, not to be braggy or whatever, but I get approached by three or four girls who are like, hey, here's my number. And, you know, it's weird.
And then he tells that train story.
I know. And then they're like, oh, I don't like tough guys.
And then they're like, so were they really space aliens disguised as gangrenes? No, they were human beings. I don't know. Right. I don't like stories about humans.
Were they dressed up like ninja? No.
Yeah, were they ninjas? Were they ninja turtles? Did you kick? No, they weren't ninja turtles.
They're just people.
Hey, Vito, you want to play some Shotgun Story Worthy?
I would love to play Shotgun Story Worthy.
It can only mean one thing. It's time for Shotgun Storyworthy.
The game where our storyteller spins the storyworthy wheel of truth and tells a true one-minute story about the topic it lands on.
So everybody, say it with me.
Spin that wheel!
Break up. Okay, so my last painful breakup was horrible. I had moved in with a young lady who begged me to move in with her. And then 3 months into the relationship, she would sit there and cry all the time and smoke pot and not talk to me. And one afternoon, I was about to go into a business meeting, and I received a phone call from her best friend's husband, who said, you need to get the fuck out. If you don't get here in 15 minutes, I'm going to throw all of your stuff out in the street, and you're not going to be able to go to Comic-Con. And so I had to go and do the walk of shame with a couple of friends of mine, and she sat in the corner and stared at me like I was a demon as I moved all of my stuff out of the place.
And are you Facebook friends with her?
I was, but as soon as I got home, I unfriended her immediately.
Good for you.
Yeah.
That's how you do it.
Yes, and her best friend and her friend's husband.
Yeah, fuck all of them.
Yeah. It was pretty humiliating.
Back in the Rat Pack days, you would have been like, hey, bitch, backhand, and he walks out there, you're like, I'm unfriending you.
Right. No,
I'll show you.
I would have backhanded her, and she would have been like, please stay, and I would have been like, you got it, baby. It would have been, it was a much simpler time.
You're with me tonight, dame. Right.
Yeah. I ain't going anywhere.
Yeah, see?
Exactly.
Yeah, I get one wearing leather gloves, see? Yeah.
Well, listen, I'm really excited about the story you brought, because I didn't know about Elmore Leonard, and now I do. And I'm going to read Get Shorty.
Please do, yeah.
And I think a lot of people out there know something they didn't. Am I right,
exactly,
Hannes?
Exactly. No, Elmore Leonard, like, he doesn't need us to help while he's dead. But, I mean, but And there's so many, it's amazing how much stuff there is in the world people still don't know about Elmore Leonard, yeah. even though he's incredibly successful.
You know, but at this point, there could be an Elmore Leonard podcast. I mean, there really
there probably is an Elmore Leonard podcast, I mean, let's face it. Somewhere in Michigan, a guy is doing an Elmore Leonard podcast.
I wouldn't
probably.
Doubt that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he was the master. You just can't go wrong with anything he did.
Yeah. 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 Right. I read a quote from the guy who produces Justified, and he said when he gets stuck in a script, he thinks, what would Elmore Leonard have this guy say? It's like, this is perfect. Because it's like, so it's like Elmore Leonard is on his shoulder.
Wow. It's like Kazoo in the Flintstones.
It's just like Kazoo in the Flintstones.
Ladies and gentlemen, this has been an awful lot of fun. Thank you so much for coming today.
Thank you.
It's really nice to meet you.
Same to you.
And I'd also like to thank everybody here at Sideshow Network, including Anthony Bench and Sean Merrick, and of course, Roddy Swearingen, and of course, John Thomas Griffith. You know that guy, right, Hannes?
He's got hardware.
Recently he's been ill, and now
he's
getting
better.
He's getting better, but it's just fucking scary is what it is.
It's like we were saying, it's like there are things that are real problems, and then there's, you go into meetings and people create drama.
Yeah.
And
so,
it's like, somebody you know is in a hospital. Send a good thought that way.
Helping your keeper perspective, people. We are thinking of you,
people.
John Thomas.
Yes.
And he will
be back
out there.
He's fine now. He's fine, people.
Well, he's
okay.
Getting better. He'll be back out with Cowboy Mouth at the end of March. That's the goal. And on behalf of our storyteller tonight, Vito Lapacola, and of course, you, Hannes Finney, my dear friend and co-host, my name is Christine Blackburn, saying, make it a story-worthy week.
Thanks for joining us on the Storyworthy Podcast. We'll be back next week with all new stories. Subscribe to Storyworthy on iTunes and visit the Storyworthy website at storyworthypodcast.com.
If you like listening to comedy, try watching it on the internet. The folks behind the Sideshow Network have launched a new YouTube channel called Wait For It. It's got interviews with comedians like Reggie Watts, Todd Glass, Liza Schlesinger, I've been friends with her for 10 years, one of the funniest people out there, and I still have a hard time with the last name, Liza. Our very own Owen Benjamin, that's me, takes you on a musical journey down internet rabbit holes and much more. You don't have to wait any longer. Just go to youtube.com/waitforitcomedy. There's no need to wait for it anymore. Because it's here. And it's funny. And I love you.